Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock songs.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Red Beard, and today in the studio, it is a full retrospective on the Topanga Canyon troubadour, Jackson Browne.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see. I hear their cries, just say if it's too late for me.
That's what songs do. People, they unite people, and they connect people to issues, and they sometimes they're a rallying point, other times it's, you know, they console people.
She's got to be somebody's baby.
There's some music that you can't just have on in the background. Some music you need to listen to intently. You know, I mean, if you're getting some information, or if you're somehow getting some sort of reinforcement for something that you're thinking or believing, or some question that you're asking, it's not background music for conversation. Hi, this is Jackson Browne, and the next voice you hear in the studio is the best of Jackson Browne.
Along with James Taylor and Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne became the template for the post-Dylan singer-songwriter. While still a teenager, others including The Byrds, ex-Velvet Underground singer Nico, and Linda Ronstadt all covered Jackson Browne's songs. Despite popular myth, it was Jackson Browne who was discovered and signed by David Geffen's Asylum Records before the Eagles, and even co-wrote their first hit, Take It Easy. Jackson Browne placed no less than 3 albums on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time, and was elected into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yet, the Hall of Fame honors almost preceded Browne's first ever proper career anthology. After resisting several overtures from his record company over the last 30 years, Jackson Browne finally relented and authorized an impressive Very Best Of double disc set in 2004. Jackson Browne joins me in the studio.
I finally thought, okay, this would be a good time to do this, because they're valuable to have. I mean, you can access the best of your material. You can give it to people. People can go buy it. New people can come to your music easier than if they have to go through, you know, 11 CDs to find your best stuff, you know. So it's a way of putting your best foot forward that I felt would not have been, you know, putting my best foot forward in 1980 when it was originally proposed, or 1988 when it was, you know, talked about again. So I don't think it's really an issue, at least not for me anymore, about whether or not, you know, I'm part of the past or part of the future. You know, I think that my career has lasted long enough to be able to say, well, this is the body of my work, you know. And you know, I'm that way myself. I like buying hits packages and accessing the best of something that I already know. Like, I already have, you know, like a dozen Van Morrison records. I mean, it's nice to have one where, like, a lot of the highlights come up, you know. Take it with you on a trip, carry it around with you.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my I am wise to leave them open for so long. As I have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awaken from these dreams. People go just where they will. I never noticed them until I got this feeling that it's later than it seems. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see. I hear their cries, just say if it's too late for me. Mm-hmm. my eyes, they cannot see the sky. Is this the prize for having learned how not to cry?
The song Doctor My Eyes introduced many of us to Jackson Browne by going top 10 from his 1972 debut album. But shortly after, another Browne song called Take It Easy, co-written with Glenn Frey, became the Eagles' breakthrough hit.
I finally concluded that I'm probably the least likely person to pick these songs. I mean, I know what I think my best songs are, but I don't think everybody else would agree. So these songs were a combination of trying to pick the best songs and also trying to pick the recordings that would all go on the same record and sound good, you know, that were recorded well or that I sang well enough on. And there are a few songs on there that I think are among my best songs. And there are a few songs that are missing that I think are among my best songs. A good friend of mine in my own camp, a guy that is like works in my publishing, who's a fan, and we talk about music all the time. He's a music fan. He said, look, it's not your 20 best. It's not your 30 best. It's your 15 best. Stop complaining. Just do it. Pick them. Pick them. You want my list, you know? And so he submitted a list, you know, that his wife made and that he made and like two or three of his friends made, you know, and they were wildly different from each other and very different from my own. And then a friend of mine that used to work at Rolling Stone and who works at the Hall of Fame, the director, the curator of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, looked at my list and said, well, wait a minute, you're not going to leave. Well, this is crazy. You're leaving this off and this off and this off. You know, I'd take off the, you know, he'd start, you know, like taking things off and putting things on. And eventually, I mean, I was the one in the studio trying to listen to these things go by and, you know, what would make the best record. And eventually I'd spent, you know, quite an amount of time sort of figuring it out. So there was, my criterion had to do with the players, you know, because to me it's like looking through a family album.
Jamaica was the lovely. I played her well as we lay in the tall grass where the shadows fell, hiding from the children so they would not tell. We would stay there till her sister rang the evening bell to make us say you will help me find a way to fill these empty hours. Say you will come again tomorrow, the daughter of a captain on the rolling seas. She would stare across the water from the trees. Last time he was home, he held her on his knees and said the next time they would sail away just where they please. To make us say you will help me find a way to fill these lifeless sails and stay. Ships can find the sea. A comfort and a mercy through, hiding from this world. world together. Next thing I knew, they had brought her things down to the bay. What could I do to make her say you help me find a way to fill these sails? Our waters have run dry.
Jamaica Say You Will comes from Jackson Browne's 1972 debut.
Say the song these days. I sang that song for, you know, I wrote it when I was 16. I recorded it on my second album, you know. I mean, it was recorded by other people. It has a life beyond the version of this, you know, that's on this record. But when I listen to the version that's on the record, you know, it's Jim Keltner. It's Doug Haywood playing the bass. He used to play bass, you know, with me and my band, and later played organ, later sang. I mean, it's a certain incarnation of my band. It's Jim Keltner, David Page playing piano. It's Lindley's first wonderful soaring slide solo on any of my records. And I thought, wait, this is kind of a cool document. It's you know. And I don't sing it this way anymore. I mean, I don't sing that way. I kind of sing differently, and I had to sort of get past that and think, okay, so that's the way you sang then, and this is, you know. And I put that on instead of For Every Man, because I think in a way it's a better recording, and somehow it's more of a, you know, it's my chance to see, you know, to have Keltner on the record, you know. It's like that. I mean, those are the kind of choices that I made.
Oh, people, look around you. The signs are everywhere. You've left it for somebody other than you to be the one to care. You're lost inside your houses. There's no time to find you now. While your walls are burning and your towers are turning, I'm gonna leave you here and try to get down to the sea somehow. The road is filled with homeless souls, every woman, child, and man. Have no idea where they will go, but they'll help you if they can. But everyone must have some thought that's gonna pull them through somehow. While the fires are raging hotter and hotter, but the sisters of the sun are gonna rock me on the water now. Rock me on the water, sister, will you soothe my fever brow? Rock me on the water, I'll get down to the sea. There's a seabird above you, gliding in one place, like Jesus in the sky. We all must do the best we can, and then hang on to that gospel plow. When my life is over, when I stand before the Father, but the sisters of the sun are gonna rock me on the water now. Rock me on the water. Sister, will you soothe my fever brow? Hey, rock me on water. Maybe I'll remember. Maybe I'll remember now. Rock me on the water. The wind is with me now.
Rock Me on the Water from Jackson Browne's 1972 debut album is the gem that spoke loudest to me in announcing a major new American singer-songwriter. When we return, Jackson drinks from the Fountain of Sorrow. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and visit InTheStudio.net for an exclusive live solo performance by Jackson Browne. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Jackson Browne for his very best of.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is Jackson Browne with Redbeard.
Thanks, Jackson. I wondered aloud how Browne feels when someone like me tells him how meaningful a song is that he had written almost 40 years ago when he was barely out of his teens.
Well, that's very, very gratifying, you know, to know that the songs work. You know, the song is half what people receive. You know, it's like there's half of it is what's going out into the air, and that is what I wrote and what I, you know, put out there. And the other half really takes place. It's a process that goes on, you know, like a creative process that goes on after the song is heard or during the time it's being heard. And people, you know, people have it. It's a song that they were hearing, that they listened to that summer that they, you know, went and did that thing, or that summer they were in this relationship, or this is the song that they, you know, listen to at this particular time in their life, and it's accompanied by the images that go along with that time. So they actually have combined it with their own. That's what's wrong with you know, giving that song to an advertising company and, you know, selling tennis shoes or beer or something, you know, with a song, is that, you know, you are now hooking up other people's lives and their, you know, just because it's a hit doesn't mean you own it completely, you know, and that you can do whatever you want with it. So to give it to a company to sell stuff with is, you know, is to undermine that, and or to somehow defile that thing that's taken place in people. I mean, you wouldn't want to hear like a Rolling Stone selling you, you know, some car, you know, a motorcycle or something, or like some, right?
Well,
I'd resent it, you know. So anyway,
this is a very polarized issue, and I have talked to surprisingly as many performers as you that say they don't have a problem with it, but it seems to differ.
Show me the money. That's why. It's about having money, and it may be that song. Look, there are lots of songs that wouldn't matter. A lot of songs, it doesn't matter. They don't have that kind of impact.
Okay, that's
so
where...
So you might as well sell a car, sell some shoes, you
okay.
know. No one cares if, you know, just one look. You know, no one cares if you're going to sell, like, something with that, you know. But if it's, I bought some shoes today, oh boy.
I'd shoot,
you know,
the TV.
I would deeply resent that.
I'd,
you know,
shoot,
I don't want
television.
I don't want, you know, Hush Puppies or whatever that is, you know, like, to be polluting that thing for me. I don't want to be the imagery of that song in my life,
right,
to be hooked up to a product.
Illusions, there lies the danger, and you're
like a perfect fool. So you go running off in search of a perfect stranger, while the loneliness seems to spring from your life like a fountain from a pool. Fountain of sorrow, fountain of life, you've known that hollow sound of your own steps in flight. You've had to hide sometimes, but now you're all right. And it's good to see your smile. Fountain of sorrow, fountain of life, you've known that hollow sound of your own steps in flight. You've had to struggle, you've had to fight to keep understanding and compassion in sight. At me, you've got the right, but you go on smiling, so clear and so bright.
By the time of 1974's Late for the Sky album, which contained Fountains of Sorrow, Jackson Browne had already hooked up with the talented stringmeister David Lindley, a musical relationship that endures to this day. Like contemporaries James Taylor and Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne felt compelled to connect with you.
That's what songs do. People, they unite people, and they connect people to issues, and they they sometimes they're a rallying point. Other times it's, you know, they console people. My girlfriend's father's girlfriend used to listen to my music, and she didn't listen to my music because she was into younger artists that were popular in her day. And this girlfriend of her father used to listen to my music by herself, and she thought it was creepy. She thought it was too weird, you know, that she'd find a period of a time of the day when she'd listen to these records by herself, and it was something that she did with the music by herself. And it weirded her out, you know. And I don't think it's weird at all. I actually think that's what some people do with music, and I do it with music. Listen to some people just, you know, because there's some music that you can't just have on in the background. Some music you need to listen to intently. Just the same way as if you listen to Joseph Campbell speak, or if you listen to Alan Watts speak, or if you listen to, you know, I mean, if you're getting some information, or if you're somehow getting some sort of reinforcement for something that you're thinking or believing, or some question that you're asking, you know, it's not background music for conversation.
While the words had all been spoken, and somehow the feeling still wasn't right, and still we continued on through the night, tracing our steps from the beginning until they vanished into the air, trying to understand how our lives had led us there. Looking hard into your eyes, there was nobody I'd ever known, such an empty surprise to feel so alone. Now for me some words come easy, but I know that they don't much compared with the things that are said when lovers touch. You never knew what I loved in you. I don't know what you loved in me. Maybe picture of somebody you were hoping I might be. Awake again, I can't pretend, and I know I'm alone and close to the end of the feeling. and close to the end of the feeling we've known. How long have I been sleeping? How long have I been drifting on through the night? How long have I been running? In the changing light of the bed where we both lie, made for the sky.
Title song from Late for the Sky, still one of my desert island discs. Coming back, Jackson Browne makes his commercial breakthrough, Bet at a Costly Personal Price. Follow in the studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and hear more Jackson Browne and others at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Jackson Browne, in the studio for his very best of.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is Jackson Browne with Redbeard.
Thank you kindly. The 1974 Late for the Sky album reached number 14 on the Billboard sales chart, and Jackson Browne married and had a firstborn baby boy. From afar, things appeared like everything was going well. But Browne's wife was troubled to the tragic point of suicide in spring 1976. The songs on his next album, The Pretender, had been written before her death, Jackson assured me. But nevertheless, that was the context in which The Pretender was received and scrutinized endlessly.
I kept thinking, as I made The Pretender, I thought, oh, you know, it's what's in my heart, you know, it's what was going on. But I was terrified, really, because there I was talking about the most difficult things to talk about, because it was so public, you know. I was used to trying to delve into myself and talk about what mattered, but only that was only as an anonymous person, really, you know. Or, you know, it's to be encouraged. I mean, someone singing a song that really gets to the heart of the matter or cuts to the bone. Unless everybody's so familiar with that person's life that they think it's about that person's life instead of any life. So I was having difficulty maintaining that kind of attention and celebrity, you know.
Here come those tears again, just when I was getting over you. Just when I was gonna make it through another night without missing you. Thinking I might just be strong enough after all. When I hear your footsteps echoing in the hall, baby, here we stand again, where we've been so many times before. Even though you look so sure, as I was watching you walking out my door, but you always walk back in like you did today. Telling me how you have grown.
Here Come Those Tears Again flowed from Jackson Browne's Fall 76 commercial breakthrough album, The Pretender.
What happened was that I used to write in a very narrative form. I used to write in the first person and tell stories. Like in my first album, the song Song for Adam literally is exactly what the song says. It's an iambic pentameter, and it sort of says in a rhymey, sing-songy way, you know, exactly the truth. I mean, I didn't know this guy too well, and we traveled together, and at a certain time I heard that he had died, and I always wondered if he, you know, if it wasn't a fall of some kind, or if he had jumped, and just sort of the discussion of suicide. I wrote in this narrative form, but I found that after so many people knew, so, you know, I mean, stories were written about the events of my life, that I didn't feel like I'd really sing that. I mean, I really wanted not to sing that way anymore, write that way anymore. And I had to kind of change the way I wrote.
I'm gonna rid myself a house in the shade of the freeway. Gonna pack my lunch in the morning and go to work each day. And when the evening rolls around, I'll go on home and lay my body down. And when the morning light comes streaming in, I'll get up and do it again. Amen. Say it again. Amen. I wanna know what became of the changes we waited for love to bring. Were they only the fitful dreams of some greater awakening? I've been aware of the time going by. They say in the end it's the wink of an eye. And when the morning light comes streaming in, you'll get up and do it again. Amen. Between the longing for love and the struggle for the legal tender, where the sirens sing and the church bells ring and the junk man pounds his fender, where the veterans dream of the fight fast asleep at the traffic light, and the children solemnly wait for the ice cream vendor. Out into the cool of the evening strolls the pretender. He knows that all his hopes and dreams begin and end there. A girl who can show me what laughter means. and we'll fill in the missing colors in each other's paint-by-number dreams. And then we'll put our dark glasses on, and we'll make love until our strength is gone. And when the morning light comes streaming in, we'll get up and do it again. Get it up again. I'm gonna be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender. The pretender who started out so young and strong only to surrender.
Blue Collar musical manifesto, The Pretender, from Jackson Browne, seems timeless even well into the 21st century. Even though The Pretender was a critical rave as well as Jackson Browne's first million seller, it would be eclipsed 15 months later by a total wild card album.
I had just done a world tour and was planning to make this live album, and I think Running an Empty really reflects the kind of weariness of that kind of attention, if anything, you know? If there's anything specific I was saying, it was that I just don't know if this was what I meant to do. I mean, there were a lot of really great double albums out in those days. Peter Frampton had one, and the Allman Brothers had one, and I was going to make this double album. But really, it turned into a better single album, and I actually told myself at the time that there are very few double albums that really deserve to be double albums. The River is one, Blonde on Blonde is one. I mean, there are probably lots of them, but certainly there's quite an argument that, you know, for the fact that anything that can be made more concise and trimmed down and made more elemental would be better. That was my biggest record by far, Running on Empty, and it's a total surprise. I mean, I had hoped that it would do as well as The Pretender, but it wound up doing, you know, selling far more copies and being in many ways sort of a high water mark for my career. Although I must say at the time I didn't think that it was as serious a work, an example of what I was trying to talk about in my music as Late for the Sky or The Pretender. There was a period of time in which I did make about 4 albums in 2 years, and there were a couple tours in the middle there too. Just a feeling that things change, things turn into other things that you know, like you start off to do one thing and eventually you're doing it, and then suddenly you realize it's become quite another way of life and another way of doing things. Trying not to confuse it with what you do too soon.
mine. In 69 I was 21 and a carpenter of my own. I don't know when that road turned onto the road I'm on. Need some reason to believe. If it takes all night, that'd be alright. If I can get you to smile before I leave. Looking out at the road, rushing under my wheel. I don't know how to tell you. That crazy this life feel. I look around for the friends that I used to turn to pull me through. Looking into their eyes, I see them running too. Running on, running on, running on. But I'm running. What I'm hoping to find. I'm running into the sun, but I'm running
Featuring the string-bending prowess of the one and only David Lindley. That's Jackson Browne, live from the 2010 double disc, Love is Strange. To hear the full story of the Running on Empty tour and album, visit inthestudio.net. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, plus at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. Coming up in part two, Jackson Browne delves deep into affairs of the heart as well as affairs of state. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio for the very best of Jackson Browne.